Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. I hope I am being heard. I ran into a bit of technical difficulty, which happens sometimes. Let me turn myself down. Let me, hopefully I'm not too loud into your ear. And so if I am being heard, please do me a favor and let me know. Drop me a text. I see I got some people on the horn, so let me know if I'm being heard. I got one is a 470. Good morning.
Good morning.
470. Good morning.
Yes, hello.
Hey, this is Brother Jeff.
Yeah, but hey, brother, how you doing, my brother?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine this morning. I had some technical difficulty. Am I being heard?
No.
Can you hear me?
No, you're fine. I'm having difficulty, but yeah. That's all right. We all good.
We're all good now. But, all right, my brother. Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Just I'll be around to contribute to the program if I need to.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you, brother.
Okay, peace, man.
267. Area code 267. Yep. Am I being heard? Okay, well, I'm going to continue on with this program. I'm hoping that I'm recording. I know I'm recording based upon my information. So I'm going to continue this program and what we're going to do today. Something happened, it just broke my stream, and like, wow, I was like, what? But I know that we got it back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com, and I hope you had a great holiday, a weekend of misgivings. Hope you had a good weekend, though, on the real. Hope that you and your family enjoyed each other, and you had good times, good food, and everything like that. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you guys to celebrate family getting together. I know that those of us who, you know, we're not so much into the holiday season, but we enjoy it anyway because it's about family and all of that's good. But it shouldn't take any of these European holidays, especially one that is so egregious as Thanksgiving, you know, to make it happen. Yeah. And so I did get some people to chime in. And so therefore, so I'm still trying to do some text. I'm trying to do some multitasking, which of course I'm not very good at doing. So, to call in, our calling number is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. You can call in and be a part of the program, ask any questions or comments or concerns you may have. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And Revive is on Wednesday. Wednesday after my program was on Wednesday in the morning. And her program is on Wednesday evening. Sister POC, Sister Proof of Consciousness, and her program Revive, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. On Thursdays, it's Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, as we like to say, Family Economics, with Brother DJ, Baba Kimbizi, Baba Akima, Baba Thurman, and Sister Shea, and Sister Nanana, and all the good brothers and sisters with Us Lifting Us, trying to help us understand we must pull our resources. We must be collective. And then on Fridays, it's Time for an Awakening. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, it's Time for an Awakening. 8 p.m. on Fridays, 8 p.m. until on Fridays. Then on Saturday morning, is Sports Talk. Saturday Sports Talk with host Troy Wilmore from 8 from 10 a.m. to 12 noon, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern time. It's Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore. And then I'm hoping it happens. I did hear Dr. Rogers on Blog Talk this past Saturday. Good program, Dr. Rogers, outstanding program. But let's try our best to make it happen right here on Time for an Awakening. And that's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Says he's anxious. I know we all are. And then on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, outstanding program last night at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Outstanding program last night. Had the sister on. I should have wrote her name down, from Haiti, talking about Haiti and talking about what's going on in Haiti and what happened and what continues to happen. And I even had to chime in, and I chimed in the respect that, at this particular point, at this very moment, with the amount of disrespect that African people are getting globally, and yet still, we have people who are trying to make an amends to these Caucasians, who have perpetuated the image of African inferiority globally, is the reason why they are at the crux of the problem. And yet we're still trying to humanize them. We're still trying to make them respect our humanity and to treat us with dignity and respect, because globally, nowhere is it happening for us on the continent and throughout the diaspora. I maintain the only solution for African people is a dynamic program of Pan-Africanism. It's the only solution. If you have a religion, put it in your back pocket, whatever it is. If you have a, quote, political persuasion, kick that to the curb. Because we need to come together as African people, as Africans on the continent who are conscious. I mean, when I saw and heard and read what the incoming president of Zimbabwe has proposed. He just took the oath of office, and already he's saying he is going to allow the Caucasians who stole land to be compensated. I remember when President Mugabe said, "You talking about some kind of deal for your land? You didn't have no damn deal when you took our land. There was no compromise. There was no agreements. There was no trade. It was murder and theft." Brothers and sisters, either we do this or we die. Either we unify or we die. It is as simple as that. And so those of us who, like myself, who are more so in the twilight of our years, and hoping that we see on the horizon a coming together of African people, I know this is my prayer. I know this is the prayer of our ancestors. This is the prayer of our ancestors who understood this situation for what it was. I ain't talking about those who continue to fight for integration. I ain't talking about those who think how great voting is. I ain't talking about all those compromising individuals. I ain't talking about those neocolonialists. I ain't talking about all of the foolishness that has happened to us and continues to happen to us because we don't understand that we need to be together, that we need unity, functional unity, that we need to break the imposed boundaries that these Caucasians have placed upon us, that we need to release the vice grip that they have on our minds. That's what I'm talking about. That's why some days I come on here with a passion plea that we wake up and understand this and realize this and begin to make efforts and movements toward making that happen. And the simplest thing that you could do at this very moment, right now, is be aware and conscious of what is happening to African people and have some understanding of that. And don't begin to blame ourselves and each other. Yes, the responsibility of getting ourselves out of this mess truly is ours. But when you don't have your right mind, then how can you do it? We're in perpetual stupidity. And stupidity is knowing the truth and understanding the truth, but yet still believing the lies. We're going to take a break. I'm going to tell you, family, this has been very hurtful. And very hurtful. Because, you know, we, as the saying goes, we are better than this. We are better than this. We're going to take a break. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I have an interesting article that I'm going to read. And of course, if you know me, I always try my best to put words, because somebody says words are very important. Words have meaning. Words conjure up images and vision. You visualize things because of words. And I agree. And if that is the case, then we should be using the right word, especially in somebody else's language. This language is not ours. I never forget in the ASCAC preliminary challenge where many ASCAC members came together to put together a beautiful book. And contained in that book was one chapter that where the heading was, "Can you liberate yourself in someone else's language?" Because we don't have control of the language. That's why I try my best to use words that would give a proper visualization. I don't use black because we're not black. We're Africans. Black is a color. We're Africans. And Africa is the noun. The word that precedes Africa is an adjective which describes the noun. So we're Africans. Here in America, so we're American African. If we were in Brazil, we'd be Brazilian African. If we were in London, we would be British African. You get the picture? Jamaican African, Cuban African, French African, Ghanaian African, Nigerian African. We are an African people. Imagine if we could just make that one step. The most revolutionary step we can make at this very moment in time is to say that we declare ourselves to be an African people. We are one African people. And this is the greatest threat to Caucasian dominance, European dominance in the world. So I don't use black. Every time I see that word, I throw African in there. And if there's something that is specific, I may throw American African. I don't use white because they're not white. No, they are not white. They came up with that term as a collective whiteness for their domination of the world because they warred amongst themselves as French, as Germans, as English, as French, as Spaniards. But yet they said, let's come together and make Europe a continent. Europe is not a continent by anybody's damn definition, but yet people call it the European continent. I saw, I played one of those game things online and it said, how many continents are there? I said, six. Wrong? How can it be wrong? There's only six. Seven, the European continent. Europe is not a continent. That part is just the Western, that's just a part of Western Asia, but they use the Caucasus Mountains. They use the Caucasus Mountains as a method to, as a line of demarcation to make the European continent. No, they're Europeans. They're Caucasians. And what I say is exactly what it is, brothers and sisters. It's European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. Because there's no such thing as race. There's only the human race, of which African people are the fathers and mothers of. But the Caucasians developed the concept of race. They created the concept of race. There's two people that you can even go to as an example, and that's Carol Linnaeus and Johann Blumenbach. They came up with this in the 1400s, this idea of race. There's no such thing as race. But because how they devised the concept, there is such thing as racism, and we cannot be racist. We cannot, because we have no ability to determine for anybody what can happen with them. So no. So I'm using these particular words, and any article I read, I just change the words. I don't use race, because there's no such thing as race. I use culture. There are cultures. The European imposed his culture everywhere he went. Everywhere he went, the people who he encountered, their culture to the European was inferior. Their traditions, their customs, everything was to them, to the European, had to be eradicated, had to be eliminated. And so they can impose their culture, their traditions, their religion on others. So, although we got some callers, let me try to take some of these calls. Good morning. The number starting with 447. Good morning.
Good morning, Brother Ochi.
Good morning. How are you today?
Brother, I'm on top of the world. I'm feeling great. Things are going good. As I always say, I'm always aspiring to do better, sir.
I agree with you. How are things in the UK today?
Well, as you rightfully put, black people on the world are under attack. Recently, we despite being in a toxic environment, we try to maintain a warrior spirit and keep it going. But to be honest with you, let me explain. A young man, for instance, you're probably familiar with this sort of thing. A young man on his mother sent to the shop, the shop was or a store, as you call it, 5 minutes from his home. On the way to the store, riding his bike, he gets stopped by police. The next thing, he's in hospital, severe injuries, on a life support machine.
Wow.
According to the police, he was somebody reported someone who looked like this young man, the usual spill, reported that they had a mobile phone stolen. Well, no mobile phone was found on this young man, and it's not confirmed that this is the young man they were looking for, if at all they were looking for anyone. But a simple stop. I think the young man is, if I remember rightly, is about 17. And not so long ago, we had another young man who got out of car. He was stopped. He for some reason ran into a shop. The next thing you know, the police accosted him, and he was dead. So, we're seeing similar patterns of behavior and brutality from the police on young people that exist on your side of the pond.
Yeah. And although I don't know if it's been happening as regular as it has happened in the UK as it has been happening here, because here really it has been historic. It has been systemic. The police, their whole main function is to help maintain and sustain this system. That's why I could have never have been a police. That's why I'm glad I was never in the army or the service. Because I could not have fought to maintain and sustain what this system is all about. It was not in me to do so. So do law enforcement carry guns now in the UK? I remember Bobby's only had a knife. They had no guns back in the day, but they carry guns now in the UK, don't they?
Well, you know, that's a little bit of a myth, because the regular policeman on the street doesn't carry a gun, but they have special units which do carry guns. For instance, it's necessary if it's been reported that there's someone with a firearm, they have units that will come out with guns. That's since 9/11, that's got more prolific, where the police have taken on a different stance, where you've seen more armed police, and more. There are more guns on the street, or more gun incidents, I should say. So therefore, you're having more gun units. So it's a myth that police don't carry guns in England. Police have always had guns, but the regular Bobby on the street does not carry a gun. You know, you have to be, they're part of what they call the firearms unit. So anytime if a member of the public reports that they've heard shots, then the firearm unit will turn up.
I see.
Kind of like the SWAT team.
Right, like a SWAT team, exactly. So the young man that died, he was beaten to death more than likely then by a number
of... This latest one, he was, as far as I know, that he was assaulted, held down, the injuries to his face and severe injuries to his face. So I guess he was punched and kicked and thrown about. But the previous one, he was two of them sat on him. There's CCTV evidence, in actual fact, which you can see on the internet, where they actually sat on him and just basically choked him to death. And this has been, like you say, quite frequent. So you're seeing this kind of behavior. And also, unfortunately, we have among young people a higher rate of what they refer to as black and black crime, more to do with knife crime, which is frightening. You know, it's a very worrying development.
Sure it is.
I mean, I don't want to give the picture that this is epidemic, but you know, it is. You hear it far too often.
Right. It may not be epidemic, but it's problematic, and because it's like that globally. You know, it's definitely like that here in the United States, where there's far too many of us hating ourselves. But that's by design, hating ourselves to the extent that we're willing to kill each other at the drop of a hat, or damn it, for a hat, you know, or for some shoes or coat or whatever. You know, this system itself has bred that within us to deal with internalized racism, which is self-hatred. And we act this out all the time. And then because of that, many of us blame ourselves for this condition. We don't understand, as Minister Louis Farrakhan used to say, the hidden hand that's guiding all of this, like the puppeteer. You know, we don't understand that. So we continue to blame ourselves for this wretched condition that we've been finding ourselves in over eons and periods of time, which has been well researched and documented whose fault it really is. It's the system itself. It's white supremacy. It's European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege is the crux of the main problem that we are experiencing, not just in this country, but globally. But brother, you stick with us. I'm going to go off into, if you can, a piece that my daughter hit me to, coming out of the medium, It's written by Omawale Africa, and the title is Caucasians America's Dirty Secret. And I can imagine this is, when I'm reading this, this is not just applicable to America, because really European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon. It happens in what is now called Australia. It happens what is now called New Zealand. It happens wherever Caucasians are in a predominance of control. This is the fear that people who are unlike them must deal with, must experience. So Caucasian is America's Dirty Secret, the fear of American African manhood and why we lynch bad niggers. What they show here on the, as a picture is Marshawn Lynch. These are two football players here in America, Marshawn Lynch and Colin Kaepernick. They show their jerseys on the ground as doormats for people to wipe their feet on. Here's a quote from Sister Ida B. Wells, who I admire and respected, who was the first one to call it to attention to the lynchings of African people. In captive, I don't use the word slave either, y'all. So if you hear I say captive, then that means that word was there. And I don't use that word because we were not slaves. We were captives. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We have never submitted. We have always resisted. We have always fought. We were not slaves. We were captives. And what does a captive want to do? Get free. In captive times, the African was kept subservient and submissive by the frequency and severity of scourging. But with freedom, a new system of intimidation came into vogue. The captive was not only, the African was not only whipped and scourged, he was killed. He was lynched. Ida B. Wells. Free Africans to captives. If you want to understand the African man's current condition in the West, you must start with the circumstances under which he crossed the Atlantic. Imagine for a second living a life of fulfillment, happiness, and material abundance without warning. Everything that you have is stripped away. This is the position in which the African found himself. Stowed away as a human cargo, headed for America, knowing the vast wealth that was stolen. European captors went through a great lengths to ensure the African would accept his new reality. Rather than accepting the yoke of bondage, recorded history shows that Africans resisted their enslavement through every step of the process. That's right, brothers and sisters. We fought on the continent. We fought in what is called the Middle Passage. And we fought in this hemisphere. And we continue to fight today because we were not slaves. We were captives. Rather than accepting the yoke of bondage, recorded history shows that Africans resisted their captivity through every step of the process. There are numerous accounts of African women throwing their children overboard during the Middle Passage, as well as violent uprisings where entire crews were slaughtered as African men and women collectively fought for their freedom. In fact, the very first captives to arrive on the shores of North America immediately revolted by murdering their captors and freeing themselves from captivity. 1526, modern-day South Carolina. Given the enormity of their crimes, physical chains weren't enough to grant captors the assurance of safety. In order to exert their dominance, sodomy, cannibalism, and a range of other psychopathic traumatic injuries were inflicted on the captive Africans to maintain control. European barbarism became the glue that held the system together and led to the foundation for a social order of global European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. In Robert Arm's book, The Diligent, A Voyage Through the World of Captivity, he lays bare the acts of moral turpitude that were commonplace throughout the American process of enslavement. There were rumors circulating among the captive traders about a grisly incident that took place in 1724 on the English captive ships commanded by Captain John Harding. Believing that the captives aboard the ship were plotting a revolt, Harding ordered the rest of the man whom he believed to be the ringleader. In front of all the other captives, the man's throat was slit, His heart and liver were cut out. Then the captain ordered the bloody heart and liver to be cut into 300 pieces, and he forced each of the horrified captives to eat a piece by threatening to do the same to them if they refused to do it. Yeah. This is what we have to deal with. The European project of reducing free Africans to captives relied heavily on the types of physical, psychological attacks detailed in the aforementioned text. American African men were viewed as the most severe threat to Caucasian rule. And as such, the deconstruction of American African manhood or African manhood was necessary to uphold the system. The African male was reduced to a human mule, at which point the promise of life became his carrot and the threat of death his proverbial stick. You know, I often said, in this system, this is where Caucasian men dominate. They control this. But they do it in support of their women, but they don't really love their women either. Because in our conversation this past Friday, we talked about sexual harassment and sexual assault. And we mentioned that this European culture is rape culture. It's rape culture. There's a dehumanization of anybody outside of Caucasian men. And that means they're women as well. They devalue them. It's rape culture. But the greatest threat to Caucasian men are us as African men. And that's why we're dogged off so heavily. And that's why sisters are given position, because they're not the threat. As noted in the opening chapter by Ida B. Wells, The Red Record, it was to the interest of the captor to dwarf the soul and preserve the body. Such a policy robbed the African man of his human essence, replacing his encumbered African spirit with a newly created American one. Chattel enslavement underdeveloped African men to the point of perpetuity. Having his mind radically altered and his manhood stripped away, the captive existed in a, this is a Peele's movie, Get Out, a Peelian sunken place of which he has yet to escape. So if you haven't seen the movie Get Out, then you will know what that sunken place is. The emasculated African male. In Stanley Elkin's 1959 book, Slavery or Captivity, A Problem in American Institutional and Intellectual Life, he argues every African who became a captive underwent an experience whose cruel psychic impact superseded anything that ever previously happened to him. As a result of this psychological trauma, Stanley argues that the true African identity was compromised and the captive personality was created as a mechanism to survive this horrifying experience. Caucasian owners. Caucasians developed typecasts of these personalities through which they viewed their captives. Nat, inspired by Nat Turner's Rebellion, the conqueror, the trickster, and the buck are just a small sampling of stereotypes ascended to African men. However, Sambo was the most universally adopted view held by the captors in relationship to their male captives. Elkin dedicates a full section of his book to slavery and personality. In his section, he describes Sambo's character as follows. Sambo, the typical captive, was docile but irresponsible, loyal but lazy, humble but chronically given to lying and stealing. His behavior full of infantile silliness and his talk inflated with childish exaggerations. His relationship with his master was one of utter dependence and childlike attachment. Indeed, it was the very key to his beginning, although the merest hint assembles manhood might fill the Southern breast with scorn. The child in his place could be both exasperating and lovable. Of all the roles in American life, that of Sambo was by far the most pervasive. The sanctions against overstepping it were bleak enough, but the rewards, the sweet applause, as it were, for performing with it the sincerity and feeling, were something to be appreciated and quite on another level. The key to understanding Sambo's personality type is to understand that it is a role that Caucasian dominance forces African men to play for survival. As stated in the text above, the slightest hint of Sambo's manhood was met with brute force to remind him of his place in the society. Sambo is the black face, a cooperative submission. His role is to assure the dominant society that he isn't a threat to their dominance and that he has no desire to challenge the prevailing social order. The 19th century poet Paul Laurence Dunbar captured him well in the opening lines of his famed poem, "We Wear the Mask." We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile, we tear and bleeding hearts. With tear and bleeding hearts, we smile. It's important to understand is that the mask is a lie. Sambo's outward expression of childlike defiance to Caucasian rule is the only means of disarmament under Caucasian subjugation. Dr. Tommy Curry, professor of philosophy and Africana studies, writes in his new book, The Man Not. African males are socialized to understand manhood in the context of their vulnerability and the dangers their assertiveness and competitiveness are perceived to have in the larger society. Such a role depicts the peculiar vulnerability that is shared by all African men in the former colonies of the West. African men who adhere to the silent social contract of cooperative submission are rewarded well for gleefully accepting their subjugated role. And those who rebel are punished accordingly. We see this today in the prominent African male figures such as Barack Obama and Jay-Z. In order to successfully navigate Caucasian spaces, these men have to make themselves appear less threatening as not to provoke Caucasian fear, which gives rise to Caucasian hostility. Just supposing the demure-like mannerisms of Obama or Jay-Z with that of activist athlete Colin Kaepernick, we see that Caucasian social society responds forcefully to any American African man who challenges the established order of male submission. Thomas Moss, Calvin McDowell, and Will Stewart had committed no crime against a Caucasian woman. This is what opened my eyes to what lynching really was, an excuse to get rid of African people who were acquiring wealth and property and thus kept the culture terrorized and kept the nigger down. Ida B. Wells. In the imminent period following emancipation, an average of one American African male per day was lynched between the years of 1865 and 1895. 30 years. Once every day. For nothing. Just because of who he is. Every day. For 30 years, and that's just 1895. We ain't talking about into the 20th century, where they continue all the way up into the 1950s and 60s. And even recently, when a McDonald in Alabama was lynched, when the brother right here in Atlanta, about a year ago, was lynched in Piedmont Park after the Ku Klux Klan had a rally. at Stone Mountain. And the public kept it quiet. The mayor and so forth, they kept it quiet. This man was lynched. There was no, they call it a suicide. There was no way in hell that that man could have done that. There was no markings on the tree that would that could symbolize that happening. There was nothing. The rise of Caucasian terror against free African community accompanied the rise of modern day police state. And that's what we have today, brothers and sisters, a modern day police state. And my brother, who just went off the line from the UK, can attest to that even there. According to Ida B. Wells, African men and women were lynched almost for any offense, from murder to a misdemeanor. Public lynchings were so common that justifications had to be created to explain why the American African was lynched with such impunity. Wells' claim is further supported by Frederick Douglass in his 1894 book, Why is the Negro Lynched? According to Douglass, there were three distinct accusations created to justify the Caucasian barbarism masquerading as civility. Number one, African race riots and insurrections. Number two, African supremacy and domination. Number three, the African male as a rapist. These are the justifications of why African people must be suppressed and lynched. Each of these above schemes were proven to be bogus conspiracy theories, but nevertheless, lynchings were carried out unabated right into the 20th century. During this period of more than 10,000 American African men who were hung, shot, stabbed, or burned to death. A total of 10,000 of us were killed, and a total of 3 Caucasian men were tried and convicted for the charge of murder. He used one graphic, the one where two Caucasians are shaking hands over a shield. One is the White League, and he has his back. With a gun and a bayonet on it. Then the other is the Klan with their mask on in the robe with a gun, knife. And above it, below them, is a shield with a brother and a sister just huddling and hoping and praying. And in the background, you see a man lynched. Imagery, brother, imagery. What became painfully obvious is that the lynching of American African men had very little to do with the so-called crimes they were charged with, and everything to do with maintaining a social order of Caucasian supremacy. Stated differently, absence of legal captivity, the tool of lynching is the only means to ensure African men accept their position as radically subordinate males. Long before Jerry Jones took a knee and Donald Trump lambasted the owners for not having their captives in order, the die was cast concerning the penalty for African manhood. And the penalty for African manhood and exerting African manhood is death. There's another piece I'm going to read to this. We're going to take a break. When we come back from that break, we're going to continue this conversation. This is a piece that it's called Dinner in America. Dinner in America. You probably heard this piece. It's been on Facebook. Let's hear it again because it's always so pointed. This is Jewel Morton. And the Caucasian is asking him to say something. And this is what Jewel Morton says.
Contribute. Say something.
You want me to say something? Fine. I'll say something. You people. You're not a race. You are a virus. You destroy the world. Everything beautiful you
poison. You drag us from our homes, you rape our daughters, murder our sons. You crack our spines and do all you can to break our will. You stab us. Then you put the knife in our hand and tell us it's our fault. And if you don't do it yourself, you stand by, close your eyes, and pretend there's nothing wrong. And then you pray to your God to silence our screams so that you can enjoy the happiness that we built for you with our blood. But it's not your fault. It's the only way you know how to be. And the only thing that will change anything is if another virus comes along and does to you what you do to us. And I hope that happens very soon.
Well, this evening obviously hasn't gone as I'd hoped. And I think I'm having a full-on panic attack right now. So I'm going to go to the bathroom and get myself together. And when I come back, I hope you don't see me as the devil.
You love me, maybe that will cancel out all the wrong ways you rub me. I can't understand why you wanna act ugly when I know that you miss me. Kiss me, baby, hug me. The thoughts of a human are so hard to bear when the uncivilized enterprise in despair. Video clips make us shake our derrieres while the big spring springs. Throw your guns in the air. Hollywood, Hollywood, we all want the glamour. Glitz, diamonds, and gold. Tricks, abracadabra. What's the matter, Copalata? That really makes me wonder how we manage to move around in the world of anacondas. Gotta think like a chess player, Mr. Taxpayer. Seek the truth, we abuse you, suffer soothsayer. School fools on YouTube and chat room players. Cartoons and buffoons of all assorted flavors. You used to diss my mama when you called her ancient mama. Must have seized, got a need, so you call me mountain climber. Quest feed the need of the Da Vinci code finder. Proceed to lead as the original designer. Ayo, 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 ayo. Ebenezer, he's a squeezer. Don't bow down to clown, stuff your knees up. I don't hoe around, so no G's. Peace to all my peeps who could keep up. Cause I'm leaping over them boundaries. Indigestion in the belly of the beast. New direction, heading straight for the east. You know, life is painstaking when they hide what's ancient. So who's that wrecking that microphone? Shot blessed, giving headrest to backbones. F-popper, if he was a rolling stone. Cause sisters know how to read up. Damn right we are. So what's your sexuality? Intellectual abnormality is your religion causing them casualties. So bow down to the flower, to your gods of woe. Made your slave ships, played your woman like a hoa. Wrote it in your books and we bought it in the stores. Hickory, dickory, slippery dots. Go to bed with the feds and they have crooked cops. Put the lead to the head if their agenda stops. So keep a bulletproof goose and a crew of hard rocks. Ayo, ayo, ayo. Ayo, 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 ayo. He's wheezing,
and she's coughing. We all stuck in the land of the lost, man. They trying to stick us into them coffins. So proceed to lead with caution. Misdemeanors getting meaner and his grass ain't greener. First or second class plane crash got Jesus. Y'all need gas from who? These to Beamers. Watch them as they laugh and take us to the cleaners. Read between the lines if you want some definition. They fired the grid so we led through intuition. Better watch your kids when on the net they fishing. How you rocking rims and you ain't got a pot to piss in? Lord have mercy on these folks. They got a mind so blind and we all got jokes. We just want piece of bacon from that stroke. Divorce rate sky high cause we ain't evenly yoked. Yo. Signs number 9, numerology completion. Beeping through your mind like blinds at off Venetian. Seek hard to find what I find I'm keeping. Don't be alarmed, just keep your arms reaching. Ayo, ayo, ayo. Ayo, 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 ayo,
ayo. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives. Here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Once again, I'm going to briefly state the programs that we have here on Time for an Awakening. And of course, you, our number is 215-490-9832. Our calling number is 215-490-9832. You can give us a call for any comments, questions, or concerns that you may have. And you're always welcome. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. All times that I'm going to give are Eastern times. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Revive. On Thursdays, it's Us Lifting Us, Ulu, Us Lifting Us, every Thursday from 9 p.m. until 9 p.m. for 11 p.m. And then on Fridays, after my program during the morning, it's Friday evening, and it's time for an awakening with Brother Richard and, of course, Brother Elliot. And that begins on Fridays at 8 p.m. On Saturdays, Saturday mornings, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Saturdays. And then Saturday later in the afternoon is Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Then on Sundays, it's Revive with Sister POC, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, it's Time for an Awakening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Those are our programs. And there are going to be other programs that will be happening here on Time for an Awakening Radio. Another piece to what I've read, and we'll get into some discussion. So please give us a call if anything that I've stated that you want some clarity on or you have some input into and to add to what is being discussed. Because what is being discussed right now, based upon what I just read to you, what I'm reading right now, is the threat, the constant threat that Caucasians feel that we are. That's why some believe Sister Frances Cress Welsing's theory on color confrontation, that European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege is in everything they do. It's in all areas of people activity. They must be in control. Her contention was that these Caucasians, after coming out of a dark age, medieval age, and then going around the world, taking everybody's stuff in the name of, and then encountering the females of who they landed on, had raped. And because of the rape, the pregnancy and the offspring did not look like them, which caused an innate fear in them of genetic annihilation. That the darkness of us can annihilate the Caucasianness of them. Well, the reality is that we are the first humans on the planet. And you can't get somebody like us, if two real pale Caucasians mate, you're not going to get us. In fact, genetically, it has been proven that African genes are dominant. African genes are dominant. Caucasian genes are recessive. I'm not making this up. This is any honest geneticist, any honest biologist, any honest paleontologist, or any honest anthropologist will explain that. But anyway, African male death is the threat that weaves together the American fabric. And as such, any attempt to prevent the lynching of an African man is considered un-American and a threat to the absolute rule of Caucasians, the absolute rule of Anglo-Saxon. This is Frederick Douglass. Why is the African lynched? We see this clearly in the political persecution of Colin Kaepernick, who is being denied employment by the NFL for kneeling in protest of racial injustice in America. Ultimately, there is a price to pay when you make a principled stand on righteousness. A willingness to pay that price without fear of consequence is the epitome of African manhood. I'm going to read that again. Please listen, dear brothers and sisters. A willingness to pay that price without fear of consequence is the epitome of African manhood. And that brother needs to be supported. I know the fear that these Caucasians have put in us. I know it. In Malcolm's final speech, Malcolm X's final speech, February 14, 1965, he said the following regarding a failed attempt on his life that occurred. On his failed attempt on his life that occurred on the eve of the event. It isn't something that made me lose confidence in what I was doing, because my wife understands, and I have children from this size on down, and even in their young age, they understand. I think they would rather have a father or a brother, whoever the situation may be, who will take a stand in the face of any kind of reaction from narrow-minded people, rather than to compromise and later on have to grow up in shame and in disgrace. That reminded me of the movie, The Great Debaters, and the James Farmer's character when his father was confronted, you know. And he looked up to his father, like any child, particularly some male child, should look up to their father, because that is the man who should give him the guidance. That is the model from which he should aspire to. But when something like that happens, then, you know, they looked at unfavorably or as weak. A week later, El Hajj Malik El Shabazz was assassinated at the Audubon Ballroom in New York, February 21st, 1965. Herman Ferguson, one of Malcolm's closest friends and chairman of the Education Committee of the OAAU, was an eyewitness to the murder. In his book, An Unlikely Hero, An Unlikely Warrior, The Evolution of a Black Nationalist Revolutionary, he details in horror the horrific details as follows. There was a brief pause in the shooting, and then it continued with the sounds of large and small caliber pistol shots filling Malcolm's body, fallen body, for what seemed to be an eternity. I remember thinking to myself, if they would just stop shooting into his body, maybe he could survive. Whoever was responsible for this deed wanted to send a message to Malcolm's followers in the hall, and by extension to the entire African nationalist community, that a similar fate awaited anyone who desired to take on Malcolm's role. Malcolm X epitomized the American African's man's aspirations for manhood in America. And I agree wholeheartedly. Just as in his eulogy by Ozzie Davis, he was our manhood. He was our shining black prince. I'm just saying this, keeping this real. I remember when he was assassinated. I was in the car with my mother and my auntie from Chicago. and it came over the news. Why do I remember it? I didn't have an affection for Malcolm at that time, but I later had him, like I do right now, an intense love and respect and admiration for El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, because he was that manhood that we should all aspire to, that we stand in dignity and respect. He epitomized that, and like the rebellious captives aboard Captain Harding's vessel, those who survived were forced to consume his death and the thousands of deaths that occurred after him. Lynching is America's dirty secret, and whether it's Barack Obama or Donald Trump, public lynching of African men will carry on just the same. Keep the culture terrorized and keep that nigga down. It shows a picture of, an iconic picture, when lynching was happening on a daily basis. And the sister Ida B. Wells, when she was in Memphis, she had to leave. They ran her out. They were going to kill her. She was a journalist, and she was writing about it. And it was a sign that says, today a man was lynched. And they show the pictures of these young brothers and even sisters like Sandra Bland. Remember I said the three things that they were afraid of? African supremacy and domination. It's worth noting that the federal government has revived one of the oldest excuses to justify African lynchings, the threat of supremacy. If there's any insight to be drawn from the historical record, we can anticipate a notable uptick in organized state violence against our community as a domestic law enforcement prepares to stomp out the threat of, what did he call it, y'all? Black identity extremists. The Attorney General and the Justice Department in this country and the police departments are looking at the real threat as they see it. And believe me, brothers and sisters, we are. No, they're not looking at the neo-Nazis. They're not looking at the Klan. And let me clear this piece up for us right quick. White supremacists. They all are white supremacists. The president, the Congress, the senators, the judges. They're all whites. White supremacy is what they are. But see, they may, using that term and people putting people's mind of somebody who is espousing like Richard Spencer or others has white supremacists, neo-Nazis and so. No, white supremacy is what they are, is who they are. Caucasian supremacy, racism and privilege is what it is what they do. And of course, their threat is us. If there is any insight to be drawn from the historical record, we can anticipate a notable uptick in organized violence against our community as domestic law enforcement prepares to stomp out the threat of American African identity extremists. The following is an excerpt of an August 3rd, 2017 intelligence assessment, FBI Counterterrorism Division. The FBI defines black identity extremists as individuals who seek wholly or in part through unlawful acts of force or violence in response to perceived racism or injustice in American society, and some do so in furtherance of establishing a separate homeland or an autonomous social institutions, communities, and governing organizations within the United States. This desire for physical or psychological separation is typically based on either a religious or a political belief system, which is sometimes formed around or includes a belief of racial superiority or supremacy. Now, of course, that was the Nation of Islam. That was the Republic of New Africa. Now, I've attended the Republic of New Africa's meetings. I've been to the mosque. I've met Minister Louis Farrakhan. I've supported the Million Man March. I've worked closely with them. I understood, but I also understand that you cannot, I repeat, you cannot have anything in this society independent of what Caucasians will view as a threat to them and then later destroy. You cannot, I repeat, you cannot show that you have the courage to build something for yourself. Look what happened to Elaine, Arkansas, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Rosewood, Boley, so many, Allentown in Los Angeles area. Look what happened. Brothers and sisters understood that we have to come together and do stuff for ourselves, but yet the Caucasian, who is so evil-spirited, mean, jealous, hateful, vamped on those communities under the disguise of some brother accosting a Caucasian woman, vamped on those communities and destroyed them, robbed our people of their possessions, burnt their homes, either killed them or exiled them or imprisoned them. Do the research. We're coming up on 100 years ago when these incidents happened. 1918, 1919, 1920, 21, 20, all of these incidents in that particular time frame destroyed these communities out of the fear that we would show some kind of collectivism, and because we had to. We had to. And yet because of their jealousies and their hatefulness, destroyed these communities, that today there is not one community. There is not one community in America where we run that community sorely by ourselves. The economics of that community, there are jobs there, banks, insurance companies, da 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 da. No, there is nowhere. Now, there are some communities, even here, definitely here in Atlanta, where it may be a gated community, it might be a subdivision, a cul-de-sac, whatever, that we are there. Beautiful homes, manicured lawns, beautiful furnishings on the inside, but we don't have no place to buy. We got to go to the mall. There's no place in those communities. There's not a supermarket owned by us. There's nothing owned by us except those houses that we paid huge mortgages on. But yet we still got to go to the mall and buy their stuff. There is not one community, and brothers and sisters, rescue me or correct me if I'm wrong. You dial 215-490-9832 and tell me where it is. I would love to know. The African male rapist. While the historical violence of Caucasian women against American African men was not the focus of this particular writing, I feel it is necessary to inform the reader that historically Caucasian women have led, advocated for, and participated in the lynching of African men. These lynchings have often been politically motivated to ensure that the African men are not a threat to the Caucasian woman's position of power within the system of European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. That's why there were some women who were so upset with the 15th Amendment gave us the right to vote? Freedom, 13, 14, 15, one of them damn, which is wasn't about nothing. And in fact, one of the quotes is where black men can vote and white women can't. You know, no, that ain't good. So as Dr. John Henry Clark said, the white woman got the vote on the black man's back. The vote. You can have the damn vote. The following is an excerpt from Rebecca Lattimore Felton. And She was in the suffrage movement and a foremother of the feminist movement, advocating the lynching of African men. It's important to remember that Caucasian women have always played a role, a vital role, in maintaining the system of European Caucasian supremacy, lest we forget to suffer the wars of our ignorance. And they show some Caucasian women in their little Klan robes. America for the whites. America first. America first. Donald Trump. Let's make America great again. Felton also advocated more lynchings of American African men, saying that such was compared to the rape of white women. On at least one occasion, she stated that Caucasian Southerners should lynch 1,000 a week if it is necessary to protect the woman's dearest possessions. Yeah. That is just some stuff that people wrote. What I just read to you, dear brothers and sisters, is the reason why the mindset is the way that it is. And I say on this program all the time, there is nothing we can do to change the evil mindset that Caucasians have. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. What is cognitive dissonance? It is a belief. It is a core belief that they have that they are superior. And nothing, I repeat, nothing that we can do or say that can change that. Even though they have this core belief that they are superior, and evidence upon evidence upon evidence has been shown and proven that they are not. That they are not. But yet it continues and it persists because why? They ignore it. They dismiss it because in their core belief that they are superior, anything that challenges that makes them uncomfortable, makes them uneasy. Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, Dr. Diop, who is a multidisciplinarian, a brilliant man, probably him and W.E.B. Du Bois, William Edward Burghardt Du Bois, are two of the most brilliant men of the last century. And Diop, as a scientist, as a multidisciplinarian, an archaeologist, an anthropologist, a historian, you name it. A symposium was called in Cairo and said, who were the ancient Egyptians? Who were the ancient Kemetic people? And Diop, along with a linguistic, Dr. Thelophilia Obinga, argued that the ancient Kemetic people were African people, were dark-skinned African people. He argued this. He had 10 points to prove his position. Probably the smoking gun was the melanin dosage test. He could extract melanin from the mummies and prove the elevation of the melanin from those mummies, proving that the ancient Kemetic people, this was 1974 in Cairo. He argued so persuasively, he won the debate. The UNESCO wrote the history of African people in 2 volumes, but yet, today, because Caucasians suffer from cognitive dissonance, it is dismissed. So even if you watch National Geographic, the Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, PBS, whatever it is, and you see a dramatization or illustration on ancient Kemet, they'll probably show the people looking Caucasian. But if they show somebody serving somebody, yeah, exactly, they're going to be dark skinned. They're going to be African, because what they wanted to do and continue to want to do is to further put into your mind that you ain't never been nothing but a servant, and nothing could be furthest from the truth. Movie just last year came out, Gods of Egypt, Caucasian. A new Moses movie came out, The Exodus, where Christian Bale has Moses, and some other Caucasian has supposedly has Ramesses from the 19th dynasty. It's, you know, let me say this, brothers and sisters. This is why I'm saying why we have to fight this. We can't challenge Caucasians on this. They're not going to change. I'm saying we have to fight the information that they give to us. We have to reject whatever they give to us. We have to reject that. Because whatever they give to us truly in the end has never benefited us. And it never will. Join me in this conversation. You can dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And give us your perspective on what we were talking about here today. The information, what I read of why our African manhood must always be challenged in a system of European Caucasian supremacy, why it must be challenged. And you see, they could never measure up to us. Malcolm said it best. He told the Caucasians, I'm the man you think you are. I am the man you think you are because you get your manhood by stepping on others. You impose yourself onto others. And all they have done to us, all well documented by them. That's the thing. Even though today they're trying to whitewash a lot of things. They're trying to downplay the enslavement of our people. In fact, in one Texas textbook, they said that someone's like, hey, y'all, there's some jobs over the big great water. There's some jobs and we need to go get them jobs. We have a caller, 414. Go ahead, caller. Good morning, brother.
All right, man, you hit the nail right on the head, bro.
Or should we say, since we are here in the Eastern time zone, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Yeah. Okay, you know, you're explaining. Hopefully, the audience is picking up the fact that there's nothing we can do in regards to how Europeans think and how they act. Hopefully, what I get across from listening to you is to get people to understand is that we're human beings, and we have a right to exist here on this planet, and we have to determine that. And we, oftentimes, what you say is we have to get beyond the imposed boundaries that have been placed on us. So we have to do things in the collective. Because it's not about me. It's not about you. It's about us. And when we start understanding that and acting in that essence, is only then is we going to start correcting the things that we're living through. We have to be the one to change that dynamic. And I'm just glad that your program is on. I'm glad to be a part of the Time for Awakening family, because it is a time for us to wake up and start acting in the collective, and that's to our benefit. No one else's but ours. So keep doing what you're doing, brother. And you certainly earn the title Baba Oshi. And I can appreciate you, brother.
Oh, you too.
I appreciate you.
You too, man. You too, Brother Jeff. Thank you so much. You know, you know, that's why every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, this is what we talk about. We talk about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. It is not discussed enough. In fact, it really is rarely discussed. You won't hear this discussion on commercial radio, on AM or FM. Those brothers and sisters who are on the air, on those stations, you wouldn't hear this. You can't hear how I condemn and openly can't stand what Caucasians have done to us. You can't hear that. But it must be told, and we must understand it, and we must wake up to it, and we must be aware of it, and then we must guard ourselves and fight and throw off the yoke of whatever has been heaped upon us, particularly psychologically, because this is a battle. This is a war for the African mind.
You know, with that being said, brother, you're right. It's a thought process. How do we then say, how are we going to correct our behavior? We have to look within ourselves, and we have to recapture what is us. When that was taken away, we got to look at everything that's to our detriment. Everything that's taking place is to our detriment. When are we going to start understanding that we have to do things to our benefit, to a point where we move forward and love each other, to look at each other as a business partner, as a brother, someone that you're not an enemy. You're someone that's going to act in the collective. Unfortunately, we have those who's going to subtract and divide. We have to not work with those people. I don't want to just deal with somebody that knows and understand that we have to act in the collective. It's about us. So when we start acting in that manner, then we can start changing the conditions. And part of the process is understanding who we are. Wake up. Be aware of who you are. Understand that you look at statistics when we was a larger portion of this country, when you see the percentage of us is diminishing, and then you look at all the social ills that we are faced with mass incarceration rate, homosexuality, and you can go down the list as to why we don't have firm black families, then you have to understand why. They kind of maintain a certain percentage of us, of our existence, if they're not working to eliminate us. If we don't change our conditions, nobody else is going to change those conditions but us. So it started with recapturing our African mind. That's the most liberating thing you can say that we can do. Right at this moment, is declared that we're Africans, because that's what we are. They don't kill us based off our religious belief. Our political belief is based on you as an African. If you pose a threat to the dominant society, then you become a victim of this dominant society. And it never stopped.
That piece my daughter sent me was so pointed. Yeah, and that's why I had to share that, and I'll probably share it again sometime in the future.
Sure.
Because it's a very pointed piece. The fact of the matter is that this society has never and will never value our life. Yes, this society has a lot of tricknology in it. It appears one way, but it's another. A lot of sayings that say this to that, but it means something different. So that all of this facade has so many of us fooled. And there are some of us who feel that, I found my comfortable niche. I found my comfortable corner in European Caucasian supremacy and racism and privilege. And so I'm happy. I got mine. You get yours. And if you didn't get yours, then it's your fault, because it's there for the getting. Now, understand something. It's not like that. Not all of us are going to, quote, make it. It's not even designed for Caucasians to make it. But what happened was when, like in Bacon's Rebellion, when Africans, captive Africans, and some literally captive Caucasians got together to revolt together. And that is at the time when the Caucasians said, we can't have that. We can't have poor folks coming together against us. So we got to tell these Caucasians, yeah, you might be poor, but at least you ain't black. At least you ain't a nigga. And also, too, you could be what I am. You could, that's why there's a lot of Caucasians who are truly against reparations. Hell, there's a lot of us foolishly against reparations, but the Caucasian, their whole thing is that this system which is the best system in the world as far as they're concerned, can possibly lend to the fact that I too can live in opulence. I too can be wealthy beyond any measure and dream. And that is a reality. That is true. The lottery's out there every day. Buy your ticket. Cost you $2 for these super lotteries. Powerball and Mega Millions cost you $2 now a ticket. And if you hit right now, they're both over $100 million. But they're against redistribution of wealth. They're against it because they believe that they too could have the hundreds of millions of dollars and a $1 billion, being that 1% of the 10% of those who control 90% of the resources of the world. That 1% are the oligarchy. They are the oligarchs. They are the billionaires. They are the ones that run and dominate control.
And, you know, brothers, within that system, you see the chaos that exists. You know, and there's enough resources here on this planet where every human being that's born here could live out its existence without needing or wanting anything. But it's the greed factor in which you speak in terms of. It's about me as an individual, not me as a human being. We have to stop embracing our humanity and understand and express to the world we're human beings just like you are. We have every human right to exist on this planet just like you. And if you carry that illness, that Urugu virus, that you think you're better, then them the ones that are supposed to be placed in prisons. Those are the ones that need to be isolated. Those are the ones that need to be watched. So that's the real terrorism right there. When you have somebody have a core belief that they're better than you, those are the ones that bring the chaos in the world today. And it's not in a harmonic fashion where everybody have a right to exist here on this planet, because there's enough resources to sustain the human beings just born here without the greed and the individualism and not a respect for human life. So that's the problem with today's society. It's just that you got someone that's thinking that they're, you know, the core belief is they're better than anyone else. They're privileged. And that's in itself lies the problem.
And be that as it is, there's nothing we can do to change the minds of those who believe that. There's not a thing that we can do. There's nothing that we can say. There's no proof that we can present. There's nothing we can do. And so my contention is, stop it. Don't even try. Don't even try. In fact, I maintain is that just like in the movie Get Out, that's what we need to do. Get out.
Yeah.
We need to go home, go to Africa, work with brothers and sisters on the continent of Africa who have the same mindset that we do. Get rid of, just like the incoming president of Zimbabwe. I mean, when he just took the damn oath, and right away he's saying, I am going to compensate those Caucasians whose land, which they took from the Zimbabweans, I'm going to compensate them. I'm like, wow. Today, neocolonialism is more evident than ever. And the other thing is about on the continent is that the West, them Caucasians, have to continue to stake their share because of the encroachment of the Chinese. And I want their butts out as well. Africa must do for Africans. Africa must be for Africa. Africa belongs to Africans. And yet we are so fragmented. We are so diverse. And there are many of us here in this country who don't want to be African. Who makes no claims of being African. There are some of us who believe that we are not African, that we are indigenous to this land. And there's some of us who believe that we have been changed. The enslavement process that the Caucasian, this captive process, this servitude process that the Caucasians put us into changed us. We are something different. We're black. We're black. We're not African. We're black Americans. All of this stuff bothers the hell out of me, and it will always will, but I'll continue to fight to make our people understand the truth of who we are. I'll continue to do that because that's what's vitally important. We got a call, 646. Hey, Cole, what's up? What's up, Jay?
Hold up, Brother Ochi. I know you're getting ready to go off right quick, but you brung up Zimbabwe. Listen, they trying to go back to being Rhodesia. I don't know what to call them.
Me either, man.
I don't know what to call the guy that's the new president. How can any sane African talk about giving land back to the oppressor? What makes him think in his mind that it's their land and they have any sort of ownership whatsoever to the land? I don't understand the logic of it. I'm trying to figure it out. I mean, are you that desperate to have this cracker, I guess, in the sanctions against the country, that you're now going to give them back the land when the reality is that they've always still had the best land in the country as it is? Yeah. You know, nobody wants to be honest. Yes, Mugabe took land from them crackers, but he didn't take the best of land from them.
That's true.
Because he knew if he did, they would have killed them. So what he did was, and I think one of his flaws was, he took the land and he didn't give it to the brothers and sisters who were farmers to farm the land, to feed the people, to place them in a situation to where as the sanctions against the country wouldn't have been as bad as they've been.
That's
so
true.
Now you turn around and you got, I don't know what to call him, now talking about he's going to give the land back. So now what you're saying is, I'll give you the land back, and then you'll enslave and colonize my people again to work the land, and then in hopes that maybe they'll take the sanctions away. What the hell is wrong with our people? I don't understand the logic. I don't understand what he's thinking. I don't understand what he's looking to achieve or anything. Now, the question may be, maybe he wanted to get some of that Mugabe money that Mugabe got hidden over in Europe. You know what I mean? It seems, you know, that maybe they may let Mugabe leave the country and enjoy that money. But, you know, the bottom line is, in all truthfulness, he's not going to enjoy the money. His wife's going to enjoy the money. And African people are going to suffer. This just happens too much.
That's right. It happens too often.
You know, Mugabe leaves. And now you have somebody like this character comes into office, and now we're back in a situation of the new Rhodesia instead of the improved and advanced Zimbabwe. I mean, I don't know what the hell is going on. When is our people going to wake up and get a clue to what these Europeans are doing, brother?
I hear you, brother. Thanks a lot, Jay.
Hotep.
Hotep, man. Peace to you. We have another caller, 267. Go ahead. Area codes, 267. Okay. Well, we only got about 5 minutes left, brothers and sisters, and we had some good callers. We got good input from Brother Jay and, of course, Brother Jeff, and many of you out there. If you didn't want to call in, I understand, but you always have your chance right here on African Perspectives, because we love to hear your perspective. We like to hear what you have to say, you know. And don't be scared. Don't be scared, you know, because it's a learning process for all of us. Nobody knows it all but God. But God can inspire those of us who want to provide information for our people as a guide and as a way for us to get up out of this muck and mire that we are in. And as you can see, just as Brother Jay just pointed out, this situation is a global situation. It's a sad situation. It's a very sad situation. And African people, I wish my brother from the UK would call back again. Hopefully he'll call back again this week so we can engage in some more dialogue. And anybody else, anywhere they are, because European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon, and it has affected our people everywhere. And everywhere that where they are and we are, they're in a position of dominance and control, and we're in a subservient position. It defies all laws of probability, but that is the reality. That is the reality on the continent, you name it. And this situation in Zimbabwe just proved it. It just proved it. So, in a few minutes I have left, I want to thank you guys for listening. Sorry for the technical problems that I experienced at the opening of the program. These things happen. I don't want them to happen. Surely didn't schedule it for it to happen, but we picked it up. And we're doing fine right now, so I appreciate that. And we'll be doing even better this Wednesday. We'll be even doing better. So give us a listen right here on Time for an Awakening. You can go online, tell your friends to go online and find the free app, TuneIn. Get TuneIn, download that, put the search in for Time for an Awakening. And then every Monday and Wednesday and Friday from 11 a.m. Eastern Time to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, you can get African Perspectives. It's just that easy. Also, too, you just go online. Just go online and go to timeforanawakening.com or blacktalkradionetwork.com. blacktalkradionetwork.com. If you put in blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and then at 11 a.m. on Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, you'll get African Perspective. So there's many ways we can do this. There are many ways we can do this. We end this program like we end all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko, the brother who was beaten to death in prison in South Africa. Stephen Biko said, "The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor are the minds of the oppressed." This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E as well. We, brothers and sisters, have every right to help free Africa. We are the most technologically advanced Africans on the planet. Imagine what could happen when we break or release the vice grip or break the yoke that they have on us. It can be done. It must be done. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. I'll see you on Wednesday. Peace, family. Peace.